So just to lay down some of the basic features which I've been talking about, services versus goods are intangible. I can't transfer a car inspection, can I? I can't do that. They have to have the customer and the provider involved. They cannot be delivered without, you know, like a package can be left at your doorstep and one can go. But with the service, the customer involvement is required. So other than like a product, like a Coca-Cola product, okay, where services are going into creating that product, in terms of your intangibles, you will never have 100% identical. So for example, two haircuts will never be absolutely identical. Obviously, there's going to be some dissimilarity between them. A yoga experience is never going to be 100% cut and paste, copy paste. There is going to be some variable there. So you have, and also in terms of measurability. Now, of course, as we, come to later chapters and talk about service quality and, elements like total quality management, TQM, various other things, we will see that quality of services has also been made measurable so that, feedback can be taken, improvements can be made, assessments can be done, innovations can be done, and the whole customer experience can be enhanced. But that aside, it's still, from a versus a physical good, it's definitely far more difficult to be evaluating a service. Now, talking about the Indian service sector, there are all of these elements are coming in, and then they have to be watched in a manner that the pros and cons are being evaluated in a balanced manner to be able to ensure that this whole service process is service management process is as smooth as possible. So keeping in mind the aspects of intangibility, when we have a good, we have this tangible element. Lot of aspects come into play here. You have your even when the government is getting involved, not just your private sector or your individuals and corporates, you have to keep in mind a lot of elements that are going into ensuring this service management, whether that's infrastructure, data aspect, and even the government has to keep in mind the psychological, emotional aspect of service, because you cannot dissociate service from how it makes a customer feel. So whether it's a government initiative of rolling out the smart cities or Clean India, or when the government is planning to establish over 2 lakh gram panchayats for local service delivery, or establishing 100 India Post offices in largely unserviced areas of the country, like the Northeast, parts of the Northeast. So when the government is envisaging and strategizing all of these services, all these elements are coming into play there too. So these aspects are very, very important. Now, talking specifically about various elements and how the growth continues, let's look at some of the other aspects. Critical factors which become very important, as I said, is technology, accountability, customer centricity, processes, and all of these things become very important because, as I said, there's a lot of positivity with services. There's also the challenges. So how do you ensure that the challenges are being mitigated in a way that you're delivering? So when I gave you the example of Dunzo, there was an inability to respond to change, competition, which was coming from elsewhere. There were technological issues. There were issues of management involvement beyond a point because of all the exits. So changing customer needs, more than needs, another aspect that we're going to be talking about is customer perception. Because there is the needs and there is what you deliver, and there is a perception of how it is received by the customer. So from a provider's point of view, it may be a perfect service, but has it been perceived as such by the customer. All of these things become extremely important. And one of the elements which sometimes people forget to discuss is the staff involvement, engagement, and the staff training, the teams involved. Because we can talk about all the other elements of it, but unless your staff is a stakeholder on board and being given skill upgradation, trainings, accountability, there's going to be a huge gap, because it is not always the top management which is having an interface with the end user. So what does the future hold for the sector? Now, in India itself, if we look at some of the initiatives in India, so let's look at the case of e-Sanjeevani, which is under the Ayushman Bharat initiative. You have the digital medicine initiative, you have e-Sanjeevani, which is a free online initiative to provide medical consultations to people. Now, so it has obviously shown very good potential, because there have been more than 300 million consultations through e-Sanjeevani. And that is which almost amounts to 300,000 at times consultations on a daily basis. Now, while that is very, very reassuring, keeping in mind the challenges as well, you have consultations, but there is a gap in terms of the accuracy, in terms of the referrals which are happening. Because the first point, e-Sanjeevani works on a hub and spoke model, where you have a center and then you have your spokes, others, healthcare workers working, healthcare workers in healthcare centers associating with this central hub. So now, very often what happens is that the first point of interface that the patient or the customer has is a junior healthcare worker who has an initial preliminary discussion, online discussion, and then onward refers to the specialist or the doctor. So now, because of discussions and beliefs in terms of inadequate training or skill upgradation of your initial staff which is interacting, accuracy of referrals to the final medical professional, the numbers on that or the percentages on that are not very encouraging. So obviously then that leads to a huge gap in the service provision, despite the investment which is happening in this. Also, if you see very often in interiors, like there was a study done specifically for the Jharkhand area, in the very interiors, where you had a lot of challenges with IT, with connections, with the internet connections, because all of these things are important when it comes to e-Sanjeevani. You had issues in terms of language barriers, you had issues in terms of confusion in terms of understanding of the patients or the customers on how to use this service. So while there are data shows that there are more than 1.5 lakh healthcare centers connected with e-Sanjeevani, and more than close to 3 lakh medical professionals have actually served on e-Sanjeevani, yet one has seen that post pandemic the numbers and the consultations the trajectory has dropped. And there are a lot of challenges which have to be addressed, whether that's in terms of skill upgradation, technology, accuracy of referrals, which are then eventually made to the medical professionals. All of these things have to be addressed. So while the future is huge, it has to be addressed holistically, with keeping in mind the challenges which are involved in services, whether it's private, whether it's public. So, for example, one of the things which is coming in because of seeing the challenge of language barrier. Now, through GPT, the Indian translation service, Bhashini, which can convert the communication into a local language for the local grassroots people to understand is being used. So, you know, when you understand what the gaps are, you can respond with solutions such as Bhashini. So there are a lot of gaps which are there, which have to be addressed both at the public and private sector level. But purely in terms of the explosion, the fact that even the elderly now want to have no choice and want to get onto the services bandwagon, get onto the IT bandwagon, the future has huge potential. For example, when COVID-19 happened and the vaccination had to be delivered, everyone had to get their appointments online, even people who were not technologically familiar, whether it was elderly people, whether it was domestic staff, whether it was any of these elements. So future is huge, but it has to be balanced, keeping in mind the challenges which are involved. I want to touch on an example which is very, very relevant for us. You must have all seen those speed posts. People come into your building with registered post, you know, wearing the brown outfits and those that little logo. Now, speed post is a very, very holistic example in terms of how service provision does not need to have fancy frills, and service management does not need to have fancy frills and, you know, marketing and all of that, and yet can deliver phenomenally. So, purely looking at the history of, you know, the postal system in India, almost back to, you know, 1296, there is, you know, in the times of Alauddin Khilji, there are traces of or records of a postal system, which was a hand and foot system, using animals, etc. At that point of time, you know, transport through your horses, etc., or pigeons for that matter. But coming to recent times and the India Post, the success of India Post is really something which one should read up on a lot more to understand really this services management. So India Post is not your fancy courier like a DHL, like a UPS, like all of these couriers. And yet there are a lot of people who actually swear by your speed post because of the tracking, because of the reliability, because they feel, you know, it, couriers, despite being expensive, some of the couriers can, you know, damage your package or can lose it despite tracking numbers. And, you know, it's difficult and that happens. Whereas the margin of error when it comes to India Post is very, very low. And I mean, if you look at your, you know, some of your services like your passport service as well. Now, passport is the most important document that you could, that an Indian could require for their identity. Whether you want to travel internationally or not is a different thing, but we know how important we treat our passport. And, you know, when your passport renewal happens, etc., you get it through, you know, you are getting it through speed post. And it's not just because, you know, they are trying to patronize a government initiative. It is because of, you know, the reliability associated with it. And of, you know, now if you see, there are rarely any cases of, you know, that taking too much time or, you know, going in circles. And let's say you're not at home, there's a very clear little, you know, ticket which would be left for you that we tried to deliver, we will come again, or, you know, some sort of thing. So there is always a thread which is keeping you, which is making you feel secure and psychologically reassured that something as important for you is in good hands. So India Post has delivered close to 9 million, you know, packages, which is, you know, a phenomenal number of packages. And if you count it, then it's like comes to more than 100 packages a second. And how they have achieved it is through a whole system, a very streamlined process. You have more than 6 lakh, you know, letter boxes from where the packages are picked up, and then they are going to thousands and thousands of you know, centers for sorting, and then onwards to smaller centers for your onward delivery. and the delivery is happening through rail, through your road, and it is, you know, it is a very, very efficient tree, which is tree branches, which are taking it to your eventual consumer. Now, this is a very, very useful example to see that here, when I've been talking about elements like training, elements like skill enhancement, my interaction in terms of interacting with the speed post and person who's coming to deliver to your doorstep, all of those, you know, they may not be the most, you know, they may not have the highest degrees, or they may not be the, in terms of visual appeal, they may not be the most, you know, swankily dressed, but their knowledge, their understanding in terms of the criticality of what they are delivering is absolutely bang on. And understanding of the staff and the employees is a huge aspect of why this whole system has worked so seamlessly despite the challenges which India poses, and the Indian topography and the Indian demographics and purely the geographic reach of the country, the challenges that poses. So, you know, for example, when I was talking about the 100 branches to be opened in Northeast, that is not just for India Post, but the India Post Payments Bank. So clearly the reliability associated with this whole service management delivery process is that efficient, and that, you know, excels to a point where you don't have to go for expensive brand names and all of those to be able to ensure that this service, which is very, very crucial to us, is delivered in a very, very efficient manner. Now, obviously, all of these elements have contributed very significantly to the service delivery in India, to the growth of the service sector in India. And from India, let's talk about the Asia-Pacific sector. North America, for the longest time, used to be the largest contributor to the services industry. Very, very, like almost very recently, Asia-Pacific region has overtaken North America to become the largest services market. You know, it's going to be neck and neck. And you can see why. Look at the way, you know, your today, forget, you know, China and forget Korea, South Korea. Even look at the growth of Vietnam in the last few years. The way Vietnam has exploded, Vietnamese economy has exploded. So a lot of the focus, a lot of the growth and contribution to the global economy is really going to be coming from the Asia-Pacific region. Specific to India, we've you know, seen your various segments, whether it's tourism, medical tourism, IT, knowledge, the hotel industry, you know, the wellness industry. There are so many contributing to this sector. Now, some of the estimates in terms of the market value of the global services industry. It is estimated that the global services industry is valued at, the revenue is valued at approximately $18,000 billion currently. And estimates in terms of the growth, you know, by 2034, you know, 9 to 10 years down the line, it is estimated that the revenue from the current 18,000 would probably reach approximately $24,000 billion by 2034, given the way the services industry is growing domestically, globally, in the Asia-Pacific region. So it is an industry which cannot be ignored. And not just from a services industry point of view, you cannot have manufacturing without services, as we'll be seeing more of, as the example I gave you in terms of, you know, your, the example I gave you in terms of the iPhone, which is, you know, only just about 10 to 15% of the eventual, you know, cost of it in the, or the purchasing price of it in the hands of the customer is the manufacturing, and 80+% is actually your, it is your services. Now, before we move on to the other aspects of service management, so we've spoken about all of this, but eventually it is the customer, you and me, who have to share our feedback of the perceived value and also to decide not only on continuing and retaining an existing service that we have, but also whether we want to subscribe to or want to buy another service. And there is very interesting data which is available on this. And HubSpot, as per their studies, to get every new customer in, it is almost 5 to 25% more expensive to get a new customer in rather than retaining an existing customer. So if I lose an existing customer, I have to spend 5 to 25% more in terms of bringing in a new customer. So when we talk about customer service, when we talk about service management, it is not simply delivery and the end of it. It is a continuing relationship and a customer journey. And eventually, as we will see, it has bottom line impact. And that is what the stakeholders, whether it is the public shareholders or whether it is the promoters or the government, eventually that is what drives everyone over and above the other considerations. So all of these aspects have to be kept in mind when we're talking about service management. Very specific to the growth of India and India's service sector, as we move forward to discuss the other elements of the service industry, we have to keep in mind not just the domestic challenges, as I have been mentioning, and the challenges along the chain of the service delivery and management, but also other challenges which are posed. For example, a big part of the Indian IT industry is skilled manpower from India going overseas and working in various companies. Now, as we are aware of how the political scenario has changed globally and how more and more countries internationally, and especially in the West, Europe and US, are turning more inward looking when it comes to employment. There is a resurgence of nationalistic fervor. There are restrictions in terms of H-1B visas or work visas across. And all of these elements are going to be extremely crucial from a policy point of view, from a company point of view, in terms of how cross-border movement of skilled persons can happen. And that, because that is a major contributor to the growth of industries like, for example, the IT-enabled services, or for that matter, when you think of environmental concerns. Yes, growth is very important, but then there is also concern in terms of environmental backlash. For example, the tourism industry, a very, very large part of the tourism industry is your cruise ship industry. The cruise ships which take you on these fancy cruises through international waters and, exotic countries. Now, it is a very high-end industry. It's an expensive industry, absolutely luxurious cruise ships and yachts and all of those. But there are a lot of environmental concerns with this service which is being provided to tourism customers. The kind of, as I'll be delving into in some of the later chapters, the kind of pollution that happens because of a single cruise ship, whether that's in terms of the waste they are dumping in the waters, or whether it's in terms of the fuel consumption that these cruise ships are, undertaking, and the emissions and the contribution to the carbon footprint of the world. These elements are impacting policies across countries where they are banning docking of cruise ships, or they are banning cruise ships passing through certain ports. For example, Netherlands has taken certain strong stands, both from the cruise ship point of view and from the tourist point of view. So all of these things, while the future for the industry is very, very promising, there's going to be a lot of backlash from challenges which could be mitigating. For example, when it comes to India, not that it hasn't happened all over the world and doesn't happen all over the world, there are times when people are people are scared of or people are concerned about data privacy, you know, because there are all these back-end, you know, BPO centers, there are all these, there's this back-end servicing which is happening in medicine, there is this telemedicine and medical documents and, you know, banks, and people are concerned about data leakages. Now, it may only be a matter of perception, because when it comes to data leakages have happened world over, and it may be simply a matter of perception management, but when we talk about the growth of the industry domestically and internationally, all of these challenges going forward are going to play an important part in terms of all top management policy makers, employees at all levels having to keep these in mind so that they can grow in a way which is conducive to all. So all of these challenges are going to impact and have to be kept in mind, because eventually, not just from a service delivery point of view and the customer perception and psychological factor point of view, but also from a bottom line point of view, these are going to have an impact for the sector and have to be kept in mind. Thank you.